Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Three Tune Tuesday. I am your host, Bonaparte, and this is my opportunity to whisk you away to a time when wind-up phonographs were the height of technology, and the art of recording music was still a wonder of acoustics. Today is Tuesday, September the 24th, and you have found your way to my digital abode, a quaint cottage nestled in the sprawling digital countryside where all are welcome. Please come inside and make yourself comfortable. Envision yourself settling into a large, plush Victorian chair, the kind that envelops you in comfort with an old-fashioned stand-up radio beside you. Close your eyes, and let me guide you on a journey through time to listen to the early years of an influential budget record label that brought music to the masses. Today we're delving into the world of Banner Records, exploring its impact on the music industry up until the end of 1923. We'll be spinning three tunes that showcase the diversity and charm of Banner's catalog, from the cozy warmth of parlor music to the electrifying rhythms of the dance hall. We'll explore how this budget label captured the spirit of the early 1920s. So this week we're continuing our exploration of early 20th century recorded music as an expansion on last week's discussion of Cameo Records, which was also a budget record label. Banner Records, established in 1922 by the Plaza Music Company in New York, emerged during a period in American music consumption which was quite transformative. In the early 1920s, home music enjoyment required a phonograph and, of course, a collection of records. The leading labels of the time, such as Victor and Columbia, priced their records between 75 cents and a dollar, sometimes upwards of $1.50 as well. This was a considerable sum that made building a substantial music collection prohibitive for many, particularly considering that with each record there was one song on each side. So Banner Records, much like Cameo that we spoke about previously, recognized an opportunity to expand music accessibility. Whereas Cameo was selling records for 50 cents apiece, Banner Records went to 25 cents each. It was this form of budget label that opened the world of recorded music to a far, far wider audience. This pricing strategy was revolutionary, allowing individuals from various economic backgrounds to participate in the latest musical trends. The phonograph companies themselves were not to be outdone, and at the same time began supplying budget phonographs as well. The Victor Victrola version 4 comes to mind as an affordable desktop phonograph. The business model underpinning Banner's affordability was both innovative and practical. They leased master recordings from smaller labels or produced their own versions of popular songs, often by utilizing pseudonyms for artists to navigate contractual complexities. This approach enabled efficient and economic production, with the benefits directly passed to consumers. Despite their budget-friendly pricing, Banner Records, like its contemporaries in the affordable record market, maintained a commitment to quality. They frequently engaged skilled session musicians and employed recording techniques comparable to those of major labels. The result was a product that offered exceptional value without compromising musical integrity. So as we examine our three selections today, consider the broader implications of Banner Records' approach within the context of budget labels that we've been exploring the last couple of weeks. These companies were more than just producing records. They were the catalysts for the democratization of music, making the vibrant and evolving world of 1920s music accessible to a vast swath of the American public. Our first selection today takes us into the heart of American home life in the early 1920s with the song In Our Parlor on a Sunday Night, recorded in 1923. This piece is performed by Joseph Samuels and his orchestra, featuring the vocals of Arthur Fields, and was composed by the duo of Benton Lay and Lee David. The song encapsulates a prevalent social custom of the era, the Sunday evening gathering in the family parlor. These occasions were a cornerstone of social life, where families and friends would come together to enjoy music, conversation, and each other's company. The song's lively melody and nostalgic lyrics paint a vivid picture of these warm, convivial, congenial evenings. Joseph Samuels was a violinist and bandleader known for his versatile musicianship and ability to adapt to various musical styles. His orchestra's rendition of the piece captures the spirit of casual, home-based entertainment that was central to American social life in the pre-radio and pre-television era. Arthur Fields, who was a prolific vocalist of the time, brings the lyrics to life with a clear emotive delivery. The popularity of these types of songs reflect the importance of music in in-home entertainment during this period. Parlor music was designed to be played and sung in the home, and it was a significant part of the music publishing industry. The songs were often sentimental, humorous, or patriotic, designed to appeal to a wide audience and to be relatively easy for amateur musicians to perform. Banner Records, who we're speaking about this week, played a role in bringing this style of music to a wider audience. By offering affordable recordings of popular parlor songs, Banner made it possible for more Americans to enjoy professional renditions of the music they already loved and enjoyed. It was this democratization of music which allowed families who might not have had the means or the musical skill to perform these pieces themselves to still be able to participate in the important social parlor music tradition. Moreover, the availability of such recordings on budget labels helped to standardize popular music across different regions of the country. A family in rural Iowa could now enjoy the same songs and performances as city dwellers in New York or Chicago. So as we listen to In Our Parlor on a Sunday Night, let's imagine ourselves transported to a cozy family parlor on a quiet Sunday evening in 1923. Picture the family gathered around the phonograph, perhaps singing along or even dancing to the tune, with their faces lit by the warm glow of gas lamps.
In our parlor Latavka, and sweet Afka, gargled to and from Latavka. Sammy Hogan, feel highbrow and start the spelling game. We all sat round and Mabel found she couldn't spell her name. So she's empty in the dome, sellers fight to take her home from our parlor on a Sunday night.
And now, before we move on to our next selection, let's take a moment to appreciate the sponsor that keeps Three Tune Tuesday coming to you every week. That is Skeleton Brew Coffee. Skeleton Brew Coffee is on a mission to deliver exceptional coffee to listeners like you and to podcasters like me. Found at https://skeletonbrew.coffee, Skeleton Brew offers 6 distinct roasts, ranging from light to dark, catering to every coffee preference. Now, what sets Skeleton Brew apart is the commitment to quality and ethics. Each batch of coffee is ethically sourced, ensuring fair treatment for coffee farmers. And the care doesn't stop there. The coffee is small batch roasted only after you place your order, guaranteeing maximum freshness when it arrives at your door. I can assure you it's much fresher than anything you would buy in the grocery store. And Skeleton Brew is not just about great coffee. With every purchase, $1 is donated for every bag purchased to nonprofit arts organizations. That means with every sip, you're enjoying both a superior brew and you're contributing to the vibrant artistic community that makes programs like Three Tune Tuesday possible. And for the fall and upcoming holiday season, Skeleton Brew has their fall and holiday roasts ready to go. So go check them out. If you're a fan of pecan pie, they've got a roast for you. And of course, the traditional Yule blend, which is always a favorite. So head on over to Skeleton Brew at https://skeletonbrew.coffee and use the coupon code TUNE10. That is TUNE10 for 10% off your first purchase. And as we move from a discussion of coffee to the vibrant dance halls of the 1920s, our next selection is the lively Ritzy Mitzy, recorded in 1923 by Sam Lannon's orchestra. This piece was composed by the duo of Con Conrad and Irving M. Bebo, encapsulating the exuberance and energy of the dance music craze that swept America during the Roaring Twenties. Sam Lannon himself was known for his ability to capture the pulse of popular music, and it really is exemplified in their tight recording of Ritzy Mitzy. The snappy tempo, the rhythms of the piece would have been irresistible to dancers of the day, from Charleston enthusiasts to those who enjoyed the foxtrot. The composers were well-versed in crafting hits that catered to the nation's growing appetite for dance music as well. Con Conrad, in particular, would go on to win the first Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1934. Ritzy Mitzy reflects the cultural shift that occurred in the 1920s. The end of World War I, coupled with economic prosperity, ushered in an era of newfound freedom and exuberance, primarily for the younger generation. This period saw a revolution in fashion, in social norms, and in music and dance. The old Victorian restraints were giving way to a more liberated form of expression, and this was very evident on the dance floor. The rise of dance music was more than just a musical trend as well. It really was a cultural phenomenon. Dance halls became central to social life, These venues allowed young people to socialize, express themselves, and participate in the new, exciting culture of the jazz age. Songs like Ritzy Mitzy provided the soundtrack to the social revolution, and Banner Records was there to help feed the fuel for this dance music craze. By offering affordable recordings of popular dance tunes, Banner made it possible for people to bring this excitement of the dance hall into their homes. This accessibility was important for those that were not in the big cities such as New York and Chicago, or even the smaller towns who might have had access to regular dance bands, because it gave those remote people the opportunity to participate in the same social customs and norms as those in the cities. Moreover, the proliferation of these recordings helped to standardize dance music across the country. A song recorded in New York, for example, could quickly become popular in Chicago or New Orleans or San Francisco. So as we listen to Ritzy Mitzy, imagine yourself moving from my quaint cottage in the digital countryside to a bustling 1923 dance hall. Picture the flappers in their short dresses and bobbed hair, the gentlemen in their suits and fedoras, and all moving to the lively beat. Before we dive into our third and final musical selection of the day, I'd like to take a moment to invite you to explore the digital home of 3Tune Tuesday, which resides over at Blind Skeleton at blindskeleton.one. Over at our parent website, you'll find a wealth of information and content celebrating the arts of yesteryear. We have reviews of vintage films, which provide context and appreciation. We have reviews, of course, of songs and music, and as well as old photographs, and photography techniques. We feature profiles of vintage musicians, and we like to shed light on the artists who shaped the soundscapes of the past. Blind Skeleton is proud to be the home of 3Tune Tuesday, and if you've enjoyed today's journey through the catalog, a very small part of the catalog of Banner Records, you'll find each episode archived on the site as well as archived on Apple Podcasts. We invite you to become part of our community of vintage enthusiasts by signing up for our mailing list. Should you sign up for the mailing list, you'll not only stay informed about new content and upcoming episodes of 3Tune Tuesday, but you will also receive a special gift, a copy of The Vintage Lover's Guide to Coffee, which was written, of course, in conjunction with Skeleton Brew. This exclusive ebook explores the history of coffee culture, the history of coffee, and how coffee and the arts have interacted through the decades. Our musical journey through Banner Records concludes today with a piece that really does exemplify both the label's business acumen and its role of disseminating the work of one of America's most influential composers. The song, Lady of the Evening, recorded in this version in 1922 by the Imperial Dance Orchestra, is a composition by none other than Irving Berlin. By 1922, Irving Berlin was already a towering figure in American popular music. Having risen from humble beginnings on the Lower East Side of New York, Berlin had by this time penned numerous hits, including Alexander's Ragtime Band and A Pretty Girl Is Like a Melody. His ability to craft melodies that captured the public's imagination was unparalleled at the time, and Lady of the Evening is no exception. The Imperial Dance Orchestra was one of the many studio groups that recorded for budget labels. The orchestra's performance in this recording was very sprightly, and it captured the sophistication that was Berlin's hallmark and demonstrated why his works were so sought after by record labels and performers alike. The song reflects Berlin's growing influence on the popular music landscape of the 1920s. His songs were known for their memorable melodies, clever lyrics, and their ability to resonate with a wide audience. The inclusion of this Berlin composition in Banner Records' catalog continues to speak about the label's strategy. By covering popular songs such as this one, Banner was able to offer its customers access to the biggest hits of the day at a true fraction of the cost of the bigger labels. This approach allowed their audience to stay current with musical trends without having to compromise on other things that they had going on at the time. Moreover, Banner's strategy of recording covers of popular songs had an impact on the music industry as a whole. It encouraged a form of musical democracy, where hit songs weren't just for those who could afford expensive records or tickets to high-end venues like the musicals in New York. Through labels like Banner, the work of composers like Berlin reached a much broader audience, contributing to the creation of the shared American musical culture. And that brings us to the end of our discussion of Banner Records today. We've explored just a small sample of their catalog that was able to bring music to a much wider audience in the 1920s. The story of Banner Records is, in many ways, the story of America in the 1920s. It's the tale of innovation, accessibility, and the breaking down of old barriers. It's also a reminder of music's power to unite, entertain, and reflect the spirit of the era. If you would like to read more about Banner Records, I encourage you to visit the Blind Skeleton website later this week as we drop a blog post that dives a little more deeply into Banner Records' history. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thank you for listening and spending some time with us to listen to some wonderful old music. I am, as always, your host Bonaparte, bidding you a good night from my digital cottage in the sprawling digital countryside.